School choice is on the Kentucky ballot this November. Proponents are saying this is a way to empower parents with more education opportunities that better fit the needs of families. Critics say that school choice takes public money and puts it into private schools and would destroy public education. Hi, I'm Richard Nelson, your host. Joining us to talk further is Martin Cothran, co-founder of Memoria Press and Highlands Latin School in Louisville. Martin's also an editor of the Classical Teacher magazine and a senior spokesperson for the Family Foundation of Kentucky. Martin, welcome to the Commonwealth Matters.
Good to be here.
Hey, full disclosure for our listeners, Martin and I worked together years ago in an entirely different lifetime. But Martin, it's good to have you join us on the Commonwealth Matters program. Martin, you've been involved with education reform for over 30 years here in Kentucky. And I think it's fair to say that over the 30 years, you saw problems with public education back in the mid-90s. I think it's fair to say that education really hasn't improved. Education performance, how our kids are doing in public schools. Is that a fair statement?
Yes. I think, 1990, they passed the Kentucky Education Reform Act, that became known as CARA. And we had quite a big public battle about that. And I think we did a pretty good job of putting a big, huge dent in it at the time, in a way, winning a lot of the public battles. But even when those kinds of reforms go away, they just come back in other forms. All the philosophy and the progressivist philosophy of those reforms are still in schools. And in fact, we saw them sort of rear their ugly head again during the Common Core movement several years ago.
Martin, the Kentucky Department of Education released education performance numbers for elementary school students, and this is what they said. 47% of elementary school students scored proficient or distinguished in reading, while 42% of elementary school students tested proficient or distinguished in math. That means that the majority of Kentucky elementary kids are not performing at grade level. So this was not that bad back when CARA was proposed. Kids were performing at a higher grade level then than they were now. After all of these reforms, after a whole lot more money has been poured into public education. Any idea, first of all, two questions. Any idea why we're seeing declining performance in this case in elementary school kids? The same is true for middle school kids as well. But any idea why the decline in education performance? And then secondly, what's the solution?
Well, we have the same problems we had before. We've never resolved them. The problem is bad education philosophy. You have to pull teeth to get a lot of public schools to teach reading in a proven methodology, phonics. You have to do the same thing when it comes to math instruction, where we want to use the newest version of the new math. And then you have the other issue of just simply there's very little emphasis on content, on educational content anymore. Our schools used to pass on the culture of the Christian West. They no longer do that anymore. And in fact, they don't pass on much of anything in terms of history and literature. We have all these fancy sounding programs that are supposed to do all this wonderful stuff, and they never do. Meanwhile, you see private schools who have, where parents are sending their children because they're just fed up with the nonsense. And you have a focus on content, a focus on basic skills, and kids are actually learning. Public schools have always had this problem. They're impervious to change. And they just keep doing these same old things that they've been doing really in this country for 100 years, and they keep calling them new, and they never work. And so here we are again.
Here we are again, and kids are graduating from our public schools, not many of them reading where they should be reading, many of them not understanding our history, our civics, and to your point about things being repackaged and new. There are many different course offerings. I think of what is being taught in our history classes, and they're teaching, modern culture, Hollywood, pop. Kids know who Madonna is, but they don't know who our founding fathers are. They might know what CRT is and Black Lives Matter are, but they couldn't tell you what the Declaration of Independence is or the three branches of government. And where do we begin with that? So kids might know some parts of modern culture, but they have no understanding of our history and the idea of our government here. Where do you start with that? Or do you just say, parents, send your kids to private school? Well, is there any hope?
Well, I've spent a good part of my life fighting the educational establishment, and what happens a lot of times is people just give up, and they send their kids to a private school, and that's what we did early on. But at the same time, you know, you have a responsibility to, you know, we're paying for these schools with our tax money, so we still have a responsibility to try to make that the best kind of education it can be. And I think that really the problem is just the lack of actual competition. I mean, schools, public schools are in competition with private schools, but there's not enough private schools to really diminish the incredible amount of money they get, which is supposed to educate most of the children in the state. Which means that, you know, one of the best ways to fight them is school choice. Make even public schools compete with each other. I think this is the only kind of mechanism that's going to do anything, because you have these big, huge bureaucracies, public school bureaucracies, and they really are impervious to change. And private schools are a threat, but not enough of a threat to really change the system, which is why I think school choice is so important, that you provide competition within their own system, and some kind of reporting that will allow people to judge, well, okay, now, so how is this school doing compared to this other school, and have the option of actually sending them to another, even public school.
Very good. Earlier this year, you wrote an article in the Kentucky Citizen where you reiterate what you just said now, but you said, like so many other otherwise worthwhile endeavors, the education of our children has suffered from the top-down approach to governing schools that has isolated many public schools from the natural accountability mechanisms that govern most important things in our lives. What is the top-down approach that you're talking about? Top-down approach to governing schools?
Well, you know, our legislature passes certain laws, and our bureaucracy implements certain other laws, regulations, and then schools are supposed to do something with that. And so we have these, then we have boards, and then we have the whole school bureaucracy. Some of that was changed in the Kentucky Education Reform Act, but not in any meaningful way. We just added another layer to the bureaucracy with the local school council. And that didn't really make any difference. The bottom line is, if you look at the, you know, I don't have the statistics in front of me, but if you look at the percentage of bureaucrats to teachers, you see a pretty frightening thing. You go to a private school, and the bureaucracy is not larger than the teaching force. There are a lot more teachers than there are bureaucrats. But in the public school, it's reversed, and it's a huge problem. There's so much wasted money, so much wasted effort. We have new programs every year, and all they do is pad the bureaucracy further. You need to find a way to deal with that, and that's hard to do.
I was on the Kentucky Department of Education's website the other day, Martin, to your point, looking at the different areas that they're involved with. One of those areas is DEI, diversity, equity, and inclusion. They have administrators that focus on DEI. I was looking at a video of a high school student that was promoting DEI. So you have a lot of money and a lot of energy devoted in that area. So I want to ask you, Martin, how does DEI contribute to educating our K through 12 kids in public schools?
Oh, well, that's easy to answer. It doesn't. I mean, we can't teach kids how to read read and write. We can't teach kids how to add and subtract. We can't teach kids just basic elements of our history, but we're really good at teaching them how to be woke. And I think parents are not about this. You know, the attitude of bureaucrats and the attitude of parents is exactly the opposite. And you know, when I talk with people, I think barbers are great sources of information about what's going on in schools and what the attitudes of parents are. And my barber, you know, just a normal person, had her kids in school for many years. And just over the course of her cutting my hair over the last few years, her attitude has completely changed. I'm not because of me, but just because of the things that are going on in the Louisville public schools. And now she's looking for a private school to put her kids into because they're not focusing on what's important. You know, instead of a department labeled DEI, we need to have a department of sounding out words. We need a department of addition and subtraction. We need, you know, our focus is so misguided. We're not focusing on the things, the basic things in schools, okay? Some of the other stuff, and not DEI, but some of the other stuff, that may have some value, but not as a replacement for what schools are supposed to be doing. So it's just another indication of a lack of focus.
So, Martin, you and I have heard for years that the problem with public education is that we just don't have enough money. We don't have enough money. We aren't paying our teachers well enough. Their teachers are leaving the profession. They're going to other states that pay more. So this is what you said in a March 2024 article. The problem with our schools is not money. The problem with our schools is a result of pronounced misallocation of resources, poor teacher training, and bad education philosophy. Expand on that, if you will.
I have whole talks on this of just what has happened to our schools really since the 1920s, because the system before that was focused on actual academic content, history and literature, math and reading. This is what you did in the school. It wasn't complicated. You didn't need a bureaucracy to do it. In most cases, there was a school board and there wasn't even any bureaucracy. And there was the teachers that you hired. You know, you go back to the little school on the prairie, and that's what was going on. And then you get the rise of, you know, two things happen, two revolutions. Okay, one is the Industrial Revolution, a late 19th century. The other is the Psychological Revolution. Psychology comes along in the late 19th century. And those two movements produce the two emphases, the two impulses in modern education, which is making schools into vocational training centers, another thing they don't do very well, and political, social type of institutions. You know, John Dewey was about using the school to change the culture in a progressive way. And then William Hurt Kilpatrick comes along and sort of hijacks Dewey's movement and throws vocationalism in there, that the purpose of schools is to fit children to the culture, as opposed to the previous, what I would call classical emphasis in education, which was to pass on a civilization. That's what schools used to be for. And everything was designed around that. But ever since the 1920s, when Dewey came around, there was one revelation. There was one revolution in schools headed by Dewey in the 1920s. It comes, parents and teachers don't like it. They run it out. Comes back again in the late 40s and early 50s. That's when Why Johnny Can't Read, the great book, came out. There was a big educational debate in this country in the 50s. It's run out of schools again, comes back again in the late 60s and early 70s with the new math and open classrooms. Then again in the 90s with outcomes-based education. And then 25 years later, every 25 years as this happens in our country, and then in about 2010 or so, we get Common Core. So, but they all do the same thing and they all repackage it, but they don't even bother to change a lot of the slogans. It's the same progressivist, vocationalist impulse. Instead of actually educating a child in the culture that we have. And that's just it's going to be a continuing problem when, you know, as long as we have public schools basically in charge of most of the nation's students.
So, Martin, bad education philosophy has taken the place of classical education. And also, you mentioned that the purpose of education is to pass on a civilization. And you could argue today that our kids are being actually uncivilized or taught to be uncivilized to the, and I think of the example of gender ideology, where the Kentucky Department of Education was actively involved with promoting the teaching of gender ideology all the way down to kindergarten. But this idea that sex and gender are malleable, that it's just a cycle, it's a psychological state of being. They're not taught science. They're not taught the reality that there is male and female. And then you have some schools even today, even though by law, public schools are not allowed to promote gender ideology or to use the preferred gender pronouns of students or to compel that use to others, they still are teaching this philosophy, this idea to our young people. So it's an uncivilization, if you will. What do you respond? What do you tell parents that have their kids in a school like that, that they're a progressive leftist school isn't even teaching basic biology to their kids? And they're in saying that you need to go along with this, or coercing parents. What do you tell parents? What should they do?
Well, I think that parents need to be talking to the school boards. They also need to be talking to their two other parents. You know, what I think was very valuable in the debate over the Kentucky Education Reform Act was when we put out proposals and we articulated ideas that were clearly better. You know, it's one thing to criticize something. It's another thing to say, here's what we need to be doing. During the Kentucky Education Reform Act, they put out these awful academic expectations. It was basically the state's academic standards. So what we did is we wrote up our own. We took things from the Cultural Literacy Foundation, some things from William Bennett's James Madison program when he was Secretary of Education, and we made our own standards. And you know what happened? People paid attention to it. The two newspapers, the Courier Journal, you know, when newspapers, you know, were influential. We had the number one and the number two newspapers in the state run the standards side by side in their newspapers, and everyone liked ours. You know, you hold up something better. You want to criticize it. You want to show that it's ineffective. I mean, and most people know that now. So what do you do instead, right? And so we did that back then, and I think that that's always the best way to do it is come up, you know, be able to articulate a vision of education that people can clearly see is better, and help, you know, in addition to helping them to put their finger on the problem themselves.
We are going to take a quick break, but we'll be right back. Hi, my name is Richard Nelson, founder and executive director of the Commonwealth Policy Center. We're here to shore up the sanctity of human life, religious freedom, natural marriage, and sound fiscal policies. At the Commonwealth Matters, we have conversations with leading thinkers and policymakers to help us think biblically about the great issues of the day. If you appreciate our work, then please consider a donation today. This work is entirely supported by people just like you. Your gifts and tax-deductible contributions help to underwrite this program, and you help to get this important message out all across the Commonwealth. We believe that the Commonwealth of Kentucky is a great place to live, and we want to keep it that way for our families and our children. That's why we're standing for what's right, for what's good, and what's true right here in Kentucky. Thanks in advance for your support, and may God bless you.
If you're just joining us, you're tuned into the Commonwealth Matters. I'm Richard Nelson here with Martin Cothran, and we're talking education reform. So, Martin, on the Kentucky ballot this fall is a constitutional amendment that allows for school choice. This is a result of the state Supreme Court saying that school choice essentially is not allowed unless you change the Constitution. This is what that ballot measure says: to give parents choices and educational opportunities for their children. Are you in favor of enabling the General Assembly to provide financial support for the education costs of students in kindergarten through 12th grade who who are outside the system of common public schools by amending the Constitution of Kentucky as stated below. And here's the sentence. The General Assembly may provide financial support for the education of students outside the system of common schools. And then it refers to several existing state statutes. Now, is that language clear enough for the average voter to understand what they're voting on?
Well, this is always the problem with amendments, and this is why it requires a little bit of voter education, which puts you at a disadvantage. But I think that we have what is known as a Blaine-style amendment in our Constitution. There was an attempted amendment on the federal level in the early 20th century to restrict any public money going to private schools, and it failed. But many states passed it in their own constitutions. That's what we did, and now we have to get it out of there. I mean, I personally think the Supreme Court was correct in its interpretation of what the Constitution says, because there was a Blaine Amendment in there. I'm a constitutionalist. You need to follow the Constitution, but you can't change it. And so what happened is we passed the bill to get that language out of our Constitution, because that was, well, there's a whole history of it. But the legislature passed it, but now the amendment itself was taken to court. Paul Salamanca at the University of Kentucky, the constitutional law professor there, is defending the amendment. And so we have that little bump to get over, but I think we should be able to pass that test and then be able to vote for it.
In fairness to the language of the amendment, this was the counsel that LRC attorneys gave to the Republican majority. They said, look, in order for this to pass muster, you have to have the language this way. Now, Martin, the KEA and other pro-public education groups are very much opposed to this. Tom Shelton is the spokesperson for the Council for Better Education, and he said this: the amendment measure paves the way for public dollars, funds meant to support the education of every child in Kentucky, to be funneled into unaccountable private institutions that are not held to the same standards of accountability and transparency as our public schools. What's your response to that statement?
That's laughable, because to say that private schools, where you can take your child out at any time if they do not perform because you're paying for it, are not accountable, is just silly. Okay, we have tried repeatedly, and this was what CARA was about. We've done other things to try to hold public schools to account, and it never works. They're basically unaccountable. And to say that they're accountable in private schools, where you can easily take your child out if you don't like it, are more accountable, is really just preposterous. That's just typical education, typical teacher union rhetoric. I mean, my rule of what good education policy is to take what the KEA says or any teacher's union says and do the reverse. I mean, that's basically a pretty reliable standard of good education policy.
So Martin, here's another thing the KEA is doing. They're scaring small towns, and they're saying that, look, if school choice is enacted or allowed in Kentucky, it will destroy your school. It's going to destroy public education, and particularly your school that may be functioning well. The parents might be happy with it. But unfortunately, many people are believing that public school or school choice for parents is going to destroy, especially small schools in the rural communities. How do you respond to that?
Well, nobody is can destroy a school better than the school itself with its own policy. They do not want to compete because they know that a private school, which has a good program and is teaching reading and is teaching math and is teaching history and literature, is going to make them look bad. Well, the solution to that is to start doing it yourself, right? I mean, we don't do this in economics. We don't say, well, the big corporation will be threatened if smaller businesses are able to operate. We don't say that. This kind of logic is not tolerated anywhere else other than the education debate.
Martin, I've talked to legislators. Actually, there's a legislator, I won't name names, a principal of a small elementary school over in Eastern Kentucky. And his concern is that allowing school choice would cherry pick the best students out of that public school and then leave the average or the kids that have special needs in place, which would create a greater demand on the public schools. What's your response to that?
Well, it actually does the reverse. If you take students out of a school, they have fewer students they have to deal with. They should be able to do an even better job. They should be able to focus their resources even more narrowly, but they don't. If they don't want to have students leave for private schools, then they need to do a better job. Okay, that's the answer, not to restrict competition.
That's good. Chronic absenteeism is in the news in Kentucky schools. A report came out this last week that says that 3 out of every 4 Kentucky schools face chronic absenteeism. And that's where 10% or more of the student population is absent on any given day. We clearly have a crisis here. Kids just not showing up for school. Do you think school choice is going to help address this issue?
Well, I don't know. But we've had this problem most severely since COVID, and it's a result of the school's own COVID policies. Okay, we now know that we didn't have to take all the extreme measures that we actually
took. That's good, Mark.
We are running
out of time. I want to close with this idea of reforming our school and replacing current education philosophy.
We now know we're not
telling us the whole truth.
Something
you've been involved with for years, and that's classical education.
And so, again, this is their own fault.
Introduce classical education or public schools.
Let's say
we do get this school choice amendment passed in the fall. And
so,
we're seeing
I think this is another
private schools,
another
good,
problem
good
of their own
there.
Creation.
Do you see it as a possibility of a public school adopting classical education, or is that just are we so far past that?
Well, they already have. I mean, in other states where there are good school choice laws, Arizona is the primary example. The Great Hearts schools. There's over 20 of them. They are charter schools. They are public schools, and they are doing classical education. So this is being done. It has been done. They're very successful, and it should be an option that Kentucky parents can have. So yes, absolutely.
Very good, Martin. We are out of time. Thank you so much for joining us on the program. God bless you, and you keep up the good work.